On a cold night in October 1937, searchlights cut through the darkness around Alcatraz. A prison guard's only daughter, one of the youngest civilians who lives on the island, has gone missing. Tending the warden's greenhouse, convicted bank robber Tommy Capello waits anxiously. Only he knows the truth about the little girl's whereabouts and that both of their lives depend on the search's outcome. It is the story told in the new novel The Edge of Lost by Christina McMorris. Almost two decades earlier and thousands of miles away, a young boy named Shanley Keegan ekes out a living as an inspiring vaudevillian in Dublin pubs. Talented and shrewd, he dreams of shedding his existence and finding his real father in America. McMorris weaves these two stories together into the novel The Edge of Lost, and it's a pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to this particular story?
Well, I've always been fascinated by Alcatraz, as I'm sure many people are. I visited the Rock years ago, and it always stuck with me. But it wasn't until recently, when I was thinking of new book ideas, I came across a documentary titled The Children of Alcatraz. And it was about children who'd grown up on the Rock as the family of the prison staff. There are about 300 civilians there, which I was surprised to know there were so many. And some of the people in the documentary were claiming to have secretly befriended some of the inmates. One of them said he even actually played checkers with Robert Stroud, of course, who is the Birdman of Alcatraz.
Right.
So as a writer, of course, that moment, the light bulb goes on, and you think, oh, my gosh, this is a novel. So that's where it came from.
And what do we know about the civilians who lived on the island?
Well, from what I understand, like I said, there are about 300 of them. They say that the family life there really was idyllic, as strange as that sounds when you're right next door to Al Capone and Machine Gun Kelly. They really tried to keep it all separate. And so it was, you know, wonderful for families, apparently. They joked that it was the safest place in the Bay Area because you knew where all the criminals were. And they would have ballet classes and dances and billiards and everything that at the time that, you know, kids would keep busy with.
This is a novel that really weaves two stories together. Tell us about these two stories and how they ultimately intersect.
Right, absolutely. Well, the story begins in 1937 on Alcatraz Island, and that is where the daughter of a prison guard goes missing. The only person who knows her whereabouts is a convicted bank robber. And his entire life is suddenly dependent on that search's outcome. But then the story jumps back in time to the grimy streets of Dublin decades earlier, and that's where you've got a poor Irish kid who ekes out a living as an aspiring vaudevillian. His chance finally comes to cross the Atlantic, his dream chance, and yet tragedy strikes en route. And so soon he will have to learn how to survive, and the two stories will end up intertwining.
When you start something like this, does it start with Alcatraz, as you mentioned, and then you say, oh, I would love to write about Ireland. I would love to include this particular aspect to the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Because Alcatraz really was that nugget of a story that, you know, that people kind of get chills when even talk about Alcatraz. And it for me, for sure, when I would convey the story to someone else. From there, I thought, where does this kid come from? I'm thinking it's, you know, an Italian family, of course. You know, you automatically think organized crime at the time. And yet, when I thought about where he came from, I started thinking about Ireland, because I don't know why that actually came to me, except I thought, wow, there's a ship coming to Ellis Island, and I realized suddenly that it was from Ireland instead. My grandfather on my mother's side, I will add in, he was dark Irish. So he had an olive complexion and black wavy hair, dark brown eyes, and it was often said he could pass as Italian. And so my grandfather inspired so many of my stories, including my World War II books.
And does this, in that sense, this really isn't a departure, because you're looking at that same time frame?
It's a similar time frame for sure, but the book backed up to 1919, is where it really then begins with the journey and then ends before World War II. So although there's some similarities with the 1940s, there were a lot of things that I was surprised when I was researching that brought me out of my comfort zone. You know, when you've got Ireland and Brooklyn in the 1920s, even just the slang terms that they used, I realized so many of those slang terms apparently came about in the 40s, unfortunately. So there was a lot of going back and taking words out and really trying to be authentic.
So what kind of research do you get to do on Alcatraz, and how many times do you visit, and what does that ultimately yield as far as information?
Right. Well, I did visit there once during the day to do a daytime tour, and then I did go back and do a night tour, which is their most popular tour, and I highly recommend it. It's incredible. They not only are you there in the evening and to go there when it's still light, but then you know, turns dark by the time you leave at about 9 or 10 o'clock at night. You also, you're seeing the lights across the bay and the sounds and the feel of the island at night, but they also have special guided tours all around the island in the evenings that they don't have during the day, which was pretty amazing. Other than that, I also interviewed a lot of people. So I interviewed people who grew up there on the rock as civilians, read a lot of memoirs, of course, and documents, and then just bugged the heck out of the park rangers. Those poor people got so tired, I'm sure, of my emails, but I wanted to make sure that I could really get the facts right if I could.
And you do get a sense of what it is like when you are there, and especially if you have a moment alone there, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. And you go into the self-guided tours, let you go into the cells. It tells you to walk into the cell, sit by yourself, turn around, close your eyes, and there's a very creepy feeling there. You can feel the history, and a lot of people say, you know, the misery that is around you there.
When you write a story like this, do you know the ending? Do you know what's going to happen?
You know, often I do. Very often with my past books, I think this is pretty common for a lot of authors. You see the beginning, you see a little bit of the middle, and definitely the ending. And that came to me from my very first novel, which was inspired by my grandparents' courtship letters from World War II. I saw that ending right from the beginning. I saw it as a movie in my head, so I wrote the movie. And in this case, I had a vague idea of where it would go, and then about two-thirds through the book, it completely surprised me. All of a sudden, I had a revelation I never saw coming. So far, I've been really thrilled to hear that readers have been surprised, too.
The name of the novel is The Edge of Lost. Christina McMorris, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Again, the title of the novel is The Edge of Lost. Christina McMorris is the novelist. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.